This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. Inshallah, today we're going to be covering an introduction to wudu and the conditions of wudu and the sunan of wudu, the recommended acts of wudu, inshallah. So to begin with, wudu. What is the definition of wudu? Generally speaking, we may have mentioned this before. When we give definitions of Islamic terminology, there's normally two definitions. There'll be the linguistic definition, and then there'll be the Islamic definition. So you have the linguistic meaning of a word, and then you'll have you'll have the Islamic meaning of the word, and there's always some link and some connection between the two meanings. For example, the word salah. The word salah can refer to, linguistically, the meaning dua. As Allah says, وَصَلِّ عَلَيْهِمْ. Allah says to the Prophet ﷺ, صَلِّ عَلَيْهِمْ. Pray for them. Inna salataka sakanul lahum. Your prayer gives them peace. So it's not, it can't be the actual salah itself. Because how could his salah give them peace? So it refers to dua. Make dua for them. Your dua gives them peace and tranquility. So the linguistic meaning of the word salah is dua. Wudu, the linguistic meaning of wudu is cleanliness. Al-nidafa in Arabic, cleanliness. So linguistically or literally, the word means cleanliness. Now, what is the Islamic definition of the word wudu? How do we define what wudu is? And definitions are important because we can learn a lot from definitions. And even last time, when we spoke about siwak, okay, what was the benefit of knowing the definition of siwak? Because a lot of the scholars, they say, anything which is used to clean and purify the mouth and the teeth is considered a siwak. And so some of the scholars say, for example, Sheikh Uthaymeen and others, that the toothbrush would be considered, if it's used for that purpose, it could be a sunnah for you to use a toothbrush for that purpose, because it cleans and purifies the mouth. So the definition of the word siwak, obviously, can help us understand the virtues and benefits of the siwak, the scope of what the siwak actually is, and likewise with other definitions also. So what is wudu then, Islamically? How do we define wudu? Any ideas? So when we're defining words, we have to make sure that the definition can't be used for any other Islamic terminology. Otherwise, it defeats the purpose of having a definition. So if we said wudu was purification, the problem is there are many other things which are part of Islam which could also be considered purification, not just wudu. For example, Ghusl. Ghusl is also purification. But there's a difference between wudu and ghusl. Purification from minor impurity, or tayammum. There's no water. Tayammum can purify you from minor impurity and you can pray. Spiritual. So you're saying wudu means? The Islamic definition, it could be a sentence describing what wudu is. That's a definition. But tayammum is purification for salah. If you don't have water, you can do tayammum. That's purification for salah. Okay, we're getting there now. Yeah, good. There has to be a specific tartib. What does tartib mean? A specific order. Okay. Okay. What's the main purpose of wudu? Okay. But more than this. Oh, before cleanliness. What are we doing? Intention to worship. It's ibadah. So wudu is a form of worship. Okay, at-ta'abbud lillah, worshipping Allah by what? Washing four parts of the body, or you could say worshipping Allah by washing specific parts of the body in a specific order. Worshipping Allah by washing specific parts of the body in a specific order. That's basically wudu. Doesn't include ghusl, because there is no specific way that you're obligated to perform ghusl, although there is a recommended way. Doesn't include tayammum, because you don't wash when you perform tayammum. Okay? So worshipping Allah, and of course it's a means of worshipping Allah. Otherwise it's not even wudu then. Because if you're not worshipping Allah and you're doing it for another reason, as we'll mention, it's not even considered an act of worship. So it's not even considered wudu for salah, it wouldn't be accepted. So worshipping Allah by washing specific parts of the body in a specific order, that's basically wudu. So how do we know the order? How do we know which parts of the body to wash? Before the sunnah. Quran. Yeah, if you can give evidence from the Quran, use Quran first. That's the primary source of evidence. Primary source of evidence for us is the Quran. And then you have the sunnah, and then you have unanimous consensus of the scholars, ijma', and then you have qiyas. So if you can give evidences from the Quran, you always give evidences from the Quran first. Why? Because the Quranic evidences are irrefutable. You cannot argue with the Quranic evidences. Clear as day. Okay, there's no issue of it being weak or, you know, sound or, you know, sahih, etc. There's no issue with Quranic ayat. So, the primary evidence of the act of wudu being an obligation is ayah number 6 in Surah Ma'idah. Surah Ma'idah, ayah 6. O you who believe, إِذَا قُمْتُمْ إِلَى الصَّلَاةِ, when you stand for the salah, فَغْسِلُوا, then you should wash وُجُوهَكُمْ, your faces, وَأَيْدِيَكُمْ إِلَى الْمَرَافِقِ, and your hands up to your elbows, وَمْسَحُوا بِرُؤُوسِكُمْ, and wipe your heads, وَأَرْجُلَكُمْ إِلَى الْكَعْبَيْنِ, and wash your feet up to your ankles. So the ayah says, O you who believe, when you are standing for salah, then wash. Which means you can't stand for salah until you've washed. So in the ayah, it's showing us that wudu is a condition of salah. From the ayah, we can tell from the ayah, wudu is a condition of salah, because Allah is telling us, before you start praying, basically, you have to perform wudu. You have to wash specific parts of the body. Ayah number 6, Surah Ma'idah. Ayah number 6, Surah Ma'idah. So this ayah shows us that wudu is obligatory because it's a command from Allah. It shows us it's a condition for salah. It also shows us the order of the parts of the body that should be washed in wudu. And also it shows us the specific parts of the body. So not only does it show us the parts of the body that should be washed, it also shows us the specific order in which they should be washed or wiped if it includes the head. So this is the ayah and the definition we've just mentioned. Now the conditions of wudu. We've gone through some of the conditions already in previous lessons, but there are 6 conditions in total that a person must fulfill before he is able to perform wudu. 3 of them are conditions for every act of worship a person is about to do. And then that leaves 3 specifically for wudu. So what are the 3 for every act of worship? Very easy. An-niyah, okay. An-niyah isn't one of them, but an-niyah is an act, is a condition. So you could say, let's say 4 then, along with niyah. Niyah is intention. Yeah, intention. Okay, good. So you have to be Muslim. Okay, good. Al-aql. And sanity, yeah. So Islam, aql, sanity, and the third one, niyah is number 4. Let's say niyah is number 4. Maturity, having reached the age of, having reached the age of puberty or having reached the age of maturity. So number 1, Islam. There is no wudu for the person who's not even a Muslim. Okay, so if a non-Muslim, you know, wants to experience what it's like being a Muslim, and he's the nicest person, you know, the nicest non-Muslim, such a good person. You know, if only he was a Muslim, he's such a nice guy, and he does wudu, okay, and he wants to feel the spiritual, you know, lift of doing wudu because he sees his Muslim friends doing it. He can do wudu, and it may make him feel refreshed, but he won't get the reward of wudu itself, regardless of, you know, how nice the person may be, because he's rejecting the belief of the oneness of Allah, rejecting Allah as his creator. And the one who should be worthy of worship. So based on that fact, there is no reward for him performing wudu. Even if he does, mashallah, all the pillars of wudu and the sunan and does it properly, like better than we've ever seen, it doesn't make any difference because he hasn't become a Muslim. Number 2, aql, sanity. So a person has to be in the right state of mind. Meaning if a person is mentally ill or mentally unstable, isn't aware of his actions, okay, he's not in control of his body because of an illness. He's not, you know, able to think properly because of a mental illness. Then it's not something which is obligatory for him to do. So the obligation of wudu and salah have been lifted because, as the Prophet ﷺ said, the pen has been lifted upon 3. One of them, the one who has gone insane, until he regains his sanity. So if it's temporary, okay, then obviously he has to perform wudu and then he must pray because now he's become sane again. But in the process of him being in a state of insanity, Allah has lifted the pen, he doesn't have to offer the wudu and he doesn't have to pray. Number 4, the intention. What is the intention when a person performs wudu? It's in the definition. But what's for Allah, to worship Allah? For the worship of Allah. At-ta'abud lillah, to worship Allah. So the intention of wudu has to be there. Okay? So let's say, for example, it's really hot and you've been training or you've been working hard and you've been working, you know, in the house or in the garden or you've been out and it's very, very hot and so you decide to freshen up. Okay? So you decide to wash your face and once you've washed your face, you think, let me wash my arms. So as a force of habit, you wash your right arm because that's what we normally do in wudu. And as you wash your right arm, you think to yourself, you know, I'm halfway through doing wudu now. I might as well do wudu. Is that wudu a proper wudu? Why? He made niyyah when he was washing his right arm. Good. So the intention is a condition. What is a condition? What do you mean by condition? Something that must be done before the act of worship. Intentions are done before the act of worship. Conditions are things which are done before the act of ibadah. You know, yeah, preceding the ibadah, before the ibadah. For example, when you have on your phone apps and at the beginning, you have to accept what? Terms and conditions. You have to accept the T&Cs. If you don't accept the terms and conditions, they won't let you use the app. Yeah? So it's prior to using the app. You have to accept the terms and conditions. Okay? If somebody, you know, asks for some money from you, and they asked you for £5, you would say to them, I can give you the £5 on the condition that you pay me back in a week. And he says, no, give me the £5. He'll say, no. He'll say, why? He'll say, because you didn't fulfill the condition that I just set. So conditions are done prior. Always remember, conditions are done before the salah. Okay? So a person, let's say he's freshening up or before the wudu, before the salah, before the act of worship, whatever the act of worship is. So if a person wants to freshen up and, you know, he's cooling down and is halfway through washing parts of the body, even though he's done it in the order that he normally does wudu in, it still won't be accepted as wudu because his intention before he washed his body parts wasn't to worship Allah, it was just to freshen up. Okay? Same thing, for example, in the morning when a person wakes up, maybe he isn't going to pray. Okay, maybe he's just freshening up in the morning and he decides to do wudu with the intention of freshening up, not with the intention of worshipping Allah through wudu, it won't be considered a wudu. Now that doesn't mean you have to say something, but it's something which is part of your intention. It's in your heart, it's not something you have to actually say. Likewise, what if a person on a regular basis is in the regular habit of performing wudu? Again, it's become a habit. Even though it's become a habit, he has to ask himself, why is he doing it? What was the reason behind him doing it in the first place? Was it because he was worshipping Allah? Yes. The goal, when he was doing this act of worship, or this act of washing his body parts, his goal, his purpose was worshipping Allah. He wanted to do wudu. Him doing it on a regular basis, okay, it's become a good habit. His intention is still to please Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. As we said, unless, and we know, it's our state of mind, if a person's hot and he decides to freshen up, that's a different intention now. The intention has changed. But if it becomes part of a person's habit and routine, of course, his intention was always to please Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, unless there is another reason which creeps up in a person's mind. But ultimately, it's just become a habit, and that's a good thing. The most beloved acts to Allah are those which are continuous, even if they're small. So a person will be rewarded for that, even if he's not consciously, actively, you know, thinking at that point in time of the wudu itself. Okay, his intention is to worship Allah. It doesn't necessarily have to be something he's consciously, actively, 24/7 having to think about. Okay? But it's in the back of his mind that he's waking up and he's going to do wudu. You know, because it's his routine. Okay? But of course, it's good for a person to refresh his intention and for a person to be in the right state of mind and worshipping Allah when he performs wudu. So the intention is something which is important. If a person does wudu for another intention, again, if a person does wudu, you know, because everybody else is doing wudu, and it's peer pressure, he's thinking, if I don't do wudu now, it doesn't look good. Because what will people say? They'll think I won't have wudu. And so he does wudu because other people are doing wudu, and not for the sake of Allah, then of course that wasn't for the sake of Allah, it was for other people. So there's a sense of riyah and showing off there. So again, niyyah, intention is important. So those are the first four conditions. Then you have two other conditions pertaining to wudu specifically. So these four are basically for all acts of worship, really. Islam, sanity, puberty, and intention, sincerity. What are the two specific for wudu? One is easy. Bismillah isn't a condition. It's something which is recommended. Easy, guys. When you do wudu, That's part of wudu. This is before wudu. What do you need to do wudu? Water, purifying water. You need water. Yeah, tahur water, purifying water. So a condition for wudu is you have to have purifying water. If you don't have purifying water, then obviously there is no wudu, it's tayammum instead. There is no wudu then, which means it has to be present. Purifying water has to be present before a person can perform wudu. If there is no purifying water, then the person has to perform tayammum instead. We'll speak about tayammum in the future. But the fifth condition is that a person must have purifying water. The person must have purifying water. That's the condition, condition number five. And we went through purifying water. Water you can use for wudu is water whose properties have not changed. The taste, smell, and color of that water. So purifying water. Number six, purifying, yeah. Water has to be purifying. Yeah, you could say that. That could be part of number six. Yeah, so a person being pure in terms of his state. Yeah. However, if a person had najasa on his body after he went to the toilet, akramakumullah, and then he did wudu, and then he was about to pray and noticed the najasa, does he have to do wudu again? And just wash it off his clothes. So he doesn't have to do wudu again. So even if it's on your body, does it break your wudu? If it comes out of your private parts, it breaks your wudu. And najasa. Yeah, then it's not something which invalidates the wudu itself. Allah knows best. So it's something which you have to clean. Let's say, for example, there's in najasa on your clothes, for example. You've done wudu already, there's najasa on your clothes. You can pray and you can pray as long as you remove the najasa and the impurity. What breaks the wudu is anything which comes out of the private parts. Okay, that is, you have to make sure the najasa is removed from your clothes and also from your body. So if a person is performing wudu and after he performs wudu, he must pray, and there's najasa on his clothes. If that najasa is on his clothes and it goes onto his body, a person has to remove that najasa, yeah, before he prays. So, number six, what is number six then? Removal of anything on the body which prevents water from reaching the skin. Removal of anything on the body which prevents the water from reaching the skin. Removal of anything on the body that prevents water from reaching the skin. So we're not talking about clothes or anything. We're saying things which are on the skin which prevent the water from actually coming into direct contact with the skin. Anything which prevents water from coming into direct contact with the skin, okay, that has to be removed before you can actually perform wudu. Well, that has to be removed in order for the wudu to be sound and for the wudu to be done properly. Why is this a condition then? So removal of anything which covers the skin and prevents water from reaching the skin. Why is that a condition? Because the whole point of wudu is that you are washing the body and parts of the body. If there's something preventing the water from reaching the skin, then you're not washing your skin. Famsahu is wiping. But faghsilu, wash, yeah. So from the ayah, faghsilu wujuhakum, wash the faces. Okay, washing your hands up to your elbows, for example. Okay, washing your feet. If anything is preventing the water from reaching the skin, then it's something which has to be removed. For example, like what? Yes, a ring. a watch, a hat? What about things which are maybe more permanent? A cast? So if a person got a broken arm, any wipe over, right off, take it off. If a person got a broken arm, you're going to force them to take the cast off and wash the arm. Certain people who have certain jobs on their skin, they might get certain products. Tattoos are permanent, yeah. Paint, for example. Paint, okay. Tattoos, obviously with tattoos, if a person is able to remove them, then that's fine, he should. If a person isn't able to, because it can cause harm, or it might be very expensive to remove them, new Muslims, reverts, for example, then inshallah they're excused, or they should try their best to remove it if they can. For example, paint. Paint covers the skin, doesn't it? It doesn't like allow the skin to breathe. You can't like, it's blocking the pores. So paint needs to be removed. Other things, such as, for example, ink. People write on their hands, isn't it? People who write on their hands. Okay, I teach in a school, and you know, you get some of the students writing on their hands. I tell them, if you write on your hands, then you can't do water properly because it's preventing water from reaching the skin. So there's a difference between things which may cover the skin, but they're easily removed, and things which cover the skin and it's not easily removed. Yeah. So certain things, they cover the skin, preventing water from reaching the skin. Other things, they may cover the skin, but it won't be hard for the water to reach the skin. Like blood, for example. Blood, you wash it and it comes off. Other things, it might be a bit more stubborn. You know, builders, they might have cement or, you know, other things on their hands, on their arms. Paint, for example, we mentioned. Ink, for example, from pens. Nail varnish. We mentioned tattoos, obviously, those extenuating circumstances. If a person, for example, has henna, does it invalidate, does that have to be removed? No. Henna doesn't have to be removed because henna doesn't block the pores, doesn't block the skin. Obviously, otherwise, our sisters and our mothers and our daughters, nobody would be wearing henna. Henna is different because it doesn't cover the skin. Tattoos is different. Okay, paint, on the other hand, all these types of things have to be removed. Nail varnish also. There was this thing that was invented a few years back. It was called breathable nail varnish. Anybody heard of it? Breathable nail varnish. And they claimed that the varnish, if you put it on your nails, it doesn't block the pores, allows the skin to breathe. And there was discussion about whether or not this is permissible to continue to wear. If a person does wudu, he won't have to remove it because it's breathable nail varnish. But Allah knows best. You know, from the things that I came across, it doesn't seem like it actually is breathable. You know, sometimes cosmetics, they use certain words, they use certain terms in a different way. It's not actually what they say it is. So it didn't seem like it would actually, because it is nail varnish at the end of the day. It's a thick layer of paint, basically. And so it is going to, I don't know how it can be breathable, how water will penetrate. Because if water penetrates, there will be no varnish anymore. Because it will seep through, it will soak through. Okay, henna is a special dye, it's different. Henna is not the same thing. That's popular amongst all, most Muslims, Muslim women across the Muslim world. But with regards to the varnish, I don't see, Allah knows best, it being something which would be allowed for a person to continue wearing it. It would have to be removed prior to a person doing wudu. So if a person has paint, if a person has nail varnish, if a person has something preventing water from reaching the skin, he has to remove it. Now, to what extent is the question now? To what extent? To the best of his ability. Okay, as best as he can. So let's say, for example, a person is about to pray and you know, he's there and he's got lots of paint on his arm because he was working in the house, so he was a builder or he's a painter. He does as much as he can. If there are certain small stubborn stains that he can't remove, and he's there for a long time trying to remove the stains to the extent where he might miss the salah, for example, okay, then, you know, he does whatever he can, and those small stubborn stains, sometimes they don't go, it might take some time, then in those circumstances, inshallah, he's overlooked because he did try his best. Yeah, so we said tattoos are different because, first of all, if a person does, tattoos are haram anyway, but if a person did it prior to him being Muslim, he won't be accountable. After he accepts Islam, if he's able to remove the tattoos without it being like, without it causing lots of harm to him, and also if he's able to financially afford it, because it can be quite expensive, especially if he has like lots of tattoos, then inshallah, if he can't do it, then he's overlooked, inshallah. He's ma'adhur, he's forgiven. There are many examples of this, yeah. Yeah. You think it does cause more harm? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. From what I've heard, it's the laser treatment, isn't it? So what is it? What does it do? Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, because it's paint. It's a type of paint. Because when they do tattoos, it goes onto. They inject the ink into the skin, don't they? Yeah, so then they'll have to use laser to actually remove it. So I can imagine it wouldn't be a very enjoyable experience. Yeah, it would probably be quite painful. Yeah, so a person does whatever he can. He tries his best to remove any of the things which are blocking his skin and the pores and the skin and preventing the water from reaching the skin before he begins his wudu. So those are the six conditions: Islam, sanity, puberty, intention, purifying water, and removing anything which prevents water from reaching the skin. So these are the conditions of wudu. Now we're going to move on to the sunan of wudu. What do we mean by the sunan of wudu? No. Sunnah has two meanings. Sunnah can mean the actions, statements, descriptions of the Prophet ﷺ. And the other sunnah that we are talking about means something else. It can also mean mandub. Recommended. It can also be mandub, yeah. So mandub or sunnah means recommended. Things which are recommended. Things which are recommended. What does it mean when something is recommended? Yeah. Good. So if a person does something which is a sunnah, okay, if somebody says this is a sunnah, okay, if they're talking about fiqh issues, related to wudu or salah or zakah or fasting, etc., okay, or something else with regards to eating, drinking, whatever the case may be, clothing, and they say this is a sunnah, okay, they may mean this is something which is recommended. Again, it depends on the type of talk. We're doing fiqh. So if they're speaking about fiqh, then when they say sunnah, it means something which is recommended. Recommended is something which, if a person does, he's rewarded for, and is not sinful if he leaves it. He's rewarded for doing it and he's not sinful for leaving it. Unlike wajib. Wajib, are you rewarded for doing? Yes, you're rewarded for doing something wajib, but you're sinful for leaving it. Okay, so now you're rewarded for doing, you're not sinful for leaving. So, the question then arises, what is the purpose of doing something which is a sunnah if you're not punished for leaving it? Praise Allah. Actions of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Okay, good. So for example, the sunnahs of salah, the two sunnahs after Maghrib, two sunnahs after Isha, they're called the rawatib. The sunnah prayers, the rawatib prayers, two before Fajr, four before Dhuhr, two after Dhuhr, or two after Dhuhr, based on the different hadith, two after Maghrib, two after Isha. They're sunan, okay? Narrations mention that on the day of judgment, the first thing Allah will hold a person to account for are his salahs. And if there are deficiencies in his salawat, Allah will say, bring from his rawatib, bring from his nawafil, his optional salawat. Bring from his optional prayers to make up for his deficiencies in the obligatory prayers. So they make up for your deficiencies and your shortcomings and your mistakes and your forgetfulness and your errors in the obligatory prayers. Okay? And the scholars, they say, this is the benefit of doing the sunnah acts, generally speaking also. They'll make up for things. Also, your sunnah acts, your recommended acts, because sometimes people think it's a sunnah, so it's fine, whatever, no big deal. Your sunnah acts will help your obligatory acts. There's a direct link. There's a direct link between the quality of your obligatory acts and the quantity and the effort you make in doing your sunnah acts. What's the connection? What's the connection here between the two? How does one affect the other? No. It's easy not to do them, in a way. Less effort. So what's the connection then? Now we're saying the sunnah benefits you in this world, specifically with your wajib acts, with your obligatory acts. How does it benefit? Excellent, Abdul Malik. Mumtaz. Brilliant. So, if a person isn't in the habit of doing his sunnahs, it's a sunnah, it's fine, it's recommended, I don't have to do it, whatever, it's fine, no big deal. Will his obligatory prayers be stronger or will they be weaker? Compared to the person who never, ever misses his rawatib prayers. Like he prays his sunnah prayers regularly, consistently, every single day. How will his obligatory prayers be? Better or worse? His prayers will be much better. His obligatory prayers... Okay, so it helps your obligatory. Yeah, and bari means it's separate, like it's not connected, but... Yeah. Oh, it prevents you. Okay, good, yeah. So it prevents you from doing better in your obligatory deeds. Good, yeah. So your sunnah acts help your obligatory acts because the more you do your sunnah acts, the less chance there is of you being lazy or being neglectful of your obligatory acts. Yeah? And the fard salawat are the good example. It's a good example. Imagine a person who never missed his rawatib every single day, prayed his two sunnahs before fajr, prayed his two after Isha, just prayed Isha, two after Maghrib, four before Dhuhr, two after Dhuhr. A person who never misses them, will it even enter his mind to neglect the obligatory salawat? It won't even enter his mind. And even he may even think, if he misses from the rawatib salawat, a sunnah prayer, he might get stressed out. He might think, I missed the sunnah. How could I miss a sunnah? In his heart, not because he knows, not because he thinks it's sinful, but because he's in a habit of doing them regularly. You understand? So your sunnah acts define how strong your obligatory acts are going to be. Salah, and also generally speaking, not just for salah, but generally speaking, this is the case. So sunnah acts, my brothers and sisters, are important, generally speaking. When it comes to wudu, when it comes to salah, when it comes to other acts of worship, the sunnah acts we shouldn't neglect. Okay, because they are, as the brother is saying, okay, they can end up being a barrier preventing you, we'll use your word, brother, we'll say barrier, preventing you from perfecting your wajibat, perfecting your obligatory acts. So, what are the sunnah of wudu? Number one is the siwak, which we spoke about in detail last week. So, the siwak is a sunnah from the sunnah of wudu, yeah. Just before one uses the performs wudu. So, a condition is something you have to do. That's why it's not considered a condition. Yeah. So one of the first sunnah we're mentioning is the siwak. Number two, washing the hands three times. Washing the hands three times prior to beginning the wudu is from the sunnah acts. Okay, the scholars, they use the ayah to define which actions of wudu are obligatory. So they say the ayah explicitly mentions things. Allah commands the Muslim to wash specific parts of the body and to do specific things in wudu in the Quran, which means these things are obligatory. And then the scholars discuss, they have discussions, deep discussions about the other things. So, number two, washing the hands three times, or even if it's once, but generally speaking, washing the hands. Number three, beginning with rinsing the mouth and cleaning the nose. Rinsing the mouth and cleaning the nose. Many of these things, as we'll see, are things that we do anyway. Meaning it's been ingrained in us. You know, if you're from a certain culture, it was normal practice to pray, you know, two raka'at after Maghrib. You know, the rawatib, it was normal for us, for some of us in some cultures. You know, our parents would always tell us, you know, three fard and two sunnahs, etc., four fard and two sunnah. It was like part of the way we were brought up, almost like as if you had to pray them. In a way, it was good. It's good to know the difference between fard and sunnah, but in a way, it was good. Likewise with wudu, you will notice some of these things we do regularly. It's like normal, we consider it something that's important to wudu. And that's obviously a praiseworthy and a good thing. So, rinsing the mouth and rinsing the nose. Number four, from the sunnah of wudu, is using your fingers to put water in your beard if you have a thick beard. So, تَخْرِيُ اللِّحْيَا الْكَثِيفَ بِالْمَاءِ. Running your fingers through a thick beard, okay, to put water through your beard. Okay, so if a person has a thick beard, then the sunnah is to use his fingers to run water through his beard. Okay, well, how do we define a thick beard? Very good. So if you can't see the skin, it's considered to be a thick beard. If you can see the skin, then it's not considered a thick beard anymore. Again, we'll speak more about that in detail. We're just going through the sunnah acts. So the sunnah, if a person has a thick beard, it's recommended for them to run their fingers through the beard and put water through their beard. Okay, if a person doesn't do that, okay, is his wudu still valid? Yeah, technically, his wudu is still valid. Number five, at-tayamun, which is starting with the right side. Starting with the right side. Again, you know, some of these things, if we saw somebody doing wudu and starting with the left side, we'd be thinking, what are you doing? Like, what is this? Isn't it? But scholars say it's actually something which is, it's not something which invalidates his wudu. Okay, tayammun, they say, is something which is recommended, and is something that many of us do anyway. Number six, al-ityan bi sifat al-wudu al-warida fi sunnah. So, washing the parts of the body as is mentioned in the sunnah. For example, washing the body parts once, or washing the body parts twice, or washing the body parts three times. They are all considered to be a sunnah. If a person washes once, if a person washes twice, if a person washes three times. If a person washes once and didn't wash all the arm properly, for example, has he washed it properly? Has he done his obligation or not? He hasn't done his obligation because he didn't wash the whole part of the arm. So he needs to make sure he washes it properly, all parts of the arm. So washing the body parts once, twice, or thrice. Okay, what about four times? It's haram. Four times is not permissible for a person to do. The Prophet ﷺ never performed a wudu and washed parts of the body more than three times. When you do wash, you wash thoroughly. If you're washing once, you make sure you wash thoroughly. Twice, the same thing, three times. Okay, but you don't do more than this because the Prophet ﷺ didn't do more than this. And also, if a person does do it, then he's almost doing something which he thinks is better than or he's doing something, acting like as if it's better than what the Prophet ﷺ did. So, washing the body parts once, twice, or thrice. Number seven, the adhkar. Mentioning the adhkar related to the salah, okay? The basmala at the beginning, or saying bismillah, at tasmiyah at the beginning, saying bismillah at the beginning of wudu, and at the end, the recommended dua, ashhadu wa la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika lahu wa ashhadu anna muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh. So these du'as, these supplications, are also supplications which are recommended. Okay, so seven altogether. Seven recommended acts, the siwak, washing the hands, rinsing the mouth and rinsing the nose, or putting snuffing water in the nose. Number four, running your fingers through your beard with water, starting with the right side. Number five, number six, washing once, twice or three times. And number seven, mentioning the adhkar, for salah before wudu and after wudu. That's also valid as well. That's also mentioned, that specific dua. Yeah. Okay, so inshallah, with this, we're going to conclude and we'll continue next week, inshallah. Any questions? Yeah. That could be once, twice, or thrice as well. Yeah. You. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, because conditions are compulsory when you're doing wudu. Cleaning with siwak isn't a condition, so it's fine if you make the intention halfway. Inshallah, it's fine. Okay, some questions here. What if someone makes wudu without the intention of praying salah, but to be in a state of wudu at all times? Would he be rewarded for this? Is this something allowed? To do wudu without the intention of praying? Of course, this is something which is good. You're getting rewarded. What did we say about the definition of wudu? First thing we said, a means of worshipping Allah. Worshipping Allah through washing parts of the body. So it's you worshipping Allah when you do wudu. The Prophet ﷺ, they say he would always be in a state of wudu. Waterproof sunscreen or moisturizers considered to cover the skin when making wudu? Yeah, I mean, they do provide some sort of protection for the skin. That's why it's important when you do wudu, you try to make sure you remove those kinds of creams, sunscreen, creams, moisturizers, Vaseline. If you have it on your body, you need to make sure it's removed when you perform wudu. Plasters, band-aids, same thing. If it's going to cause more harm, taking the plasters off and washing wherever the wound is, and it's going to cause more harm and more pain, then you can leave it on and you just try your best to wash around the plaster and whatever you can from inside the plaster without causing any harm. And you just try your best. Does the obligatory act of wiping the head include the ears? Yes, and that's something we'll speak about more in future, inshallah. Are we allowed to wash both our mouth and nose at the same time? Yes, and inshallah we'll discuss. When we speak about the actual acts of how to do wudu, there are numerous ways of rinsing the mouth and nose, and we'll speak about those, inshallah, next week. Any other questions? If it wasn't intentional, then inshallah, it's fine. Yeah, if it wasn't intentional, it's fine. No, you just carry on. Okay, jazakumullah khair. Subhanakallahumma bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.